Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Four seasons, over 30 incredible guests, hundreds of podcast recommendations. I'm your host, Laura Whitmore, and in this special series of Castaway, we'll bring you the best bits from our back catalogue, sharing those golden Castaway moments and throwing in those bingeable podcast picks we're all hungry for along the way. Welcome to Castaway, the best bits. Hello, podcast superfan, and welcome back to Castaway's Best Bits series. If you're someone who feels like you're cheating on music with podcasts, then look no further as we marry the best of both worlds with today's episode, exploring the very best music podcasts out there. Who better to kick things off than with the Radio 1 DJ and music guru, Clara Ampho, who joined us on season 2 of Castaway. A prolific person in the music scene, Clara naturally provided us with a couple of golden music podcasts, starting with Hip Hop Saved My Life. Here she explains why this made her list. I'm a big fan of Ramesh Ranganathan anyway, very funny man, but especially this particular one because this is Hip Hop Saved My Life.
I love this podcast so much. I mean, I love Ramesh. Ramesh is hilarious. I mean, surprise, professional comedian.
Thank God. It'd be terrible if he wasn't.
Right. But where did me and Ramesh first meet, actually? I can't remember where we first met. No, do you know what it was? I had listened to the podcast because I was such a fan, and I DM'd him straight up and I was like, yo, let me come on because I feel like I need to be on this.
So wait, you listened to the podcast and that's why you contacted him?
Yeah, that's how we first got chatting. I DM'd him. I was just like, your podcast is wicked. I think I'd added him in it because I'd shared the episode that I really enjoyed, and he was like, oh, thanks for the love. And I was like, yeah, can I come on please? Just because I think it's such a great concept, and for me, my favourite episodes of it are the ones where he's not talking to rappers, when he's talking to people that aren't professional rappers. I think for me, those are the true gems, because it's just such a great way to see how this art form has related to different people. Like Edith Bowman's episode is wicked. Mm-hmm. There's a great episode with Catherine Ryan, which is really, really good. And it's just such a great insight into people's lives, but just told via this medium. It's just really, really interesting.
Yeah, as you said, you mentioned some people there that you necessarily wouldn't think would show up on a hip hop podcast, but also the power and influence of hip hop over the years. What hip hop artists have really influenced you?
Oh, gosh. I mean, so many. I mean, like, hip hop music is just, it just means so much to me. Mm-hmm. It's poetry, it's political, it's party music. It's date music. It can be whatever. And I think, you know, for a genre that was called a fad when it started, you know, so many naysayers, and it has become a culture and a business that has lasted over 30, like coming up to 40 years. Like, it's incredible, you know. Do you know, the Jamie Redknapp episode was really good, actually. That was wicked. Again, like, his knowledge is like, it was so surprising and so passionate and such an enjoyable listener. And I love how Ramesh brings that out of people, you know.
And there was one I remember listening to, Ramesh and Dynamo. And it was just so interesting, Dynamo growing up and how he always felt the outsider, and he was very badly bullied when he was younger. And then finding magic and also hip hop music and certain artists. And he was like, when you get, you know, when you kind of strip back the bullshit sometimes that's surrounded by hip hop and the bravado and, you know, the big cars and all that, like the actual meaning behind it. And there was like certain artists that really helped him kind of get through really tough stages in his life. And I just actually kind of got me into hip hop artists that I didn't know about beforehand. And it's a brilliant listen.
Some of my friends from school who were the cooler kids, and just, you know, they always had like the coolest music and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And I just wanted to be kind of part of that group, so I kind of adopted hip hop.
Almost forced yourself to like it.
Yeah. But like then through it, I felt like I learned so much, like, because if you know the good artists, you know, people, even like Tupac, you know, it's very well read, and you know, it teaches, but it's a lot of it's about history. You know, it's about, you know, you actually get to hear about what people are really going through. If you if you listen past the, you know, the cliches, you know, the swearing, talking about girls, talking about, you know, what boring, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Not actually, girls, bitches, man.
You know, if you listen, if you kind of listen past that and get to the good stuff, then there's actually, you know, a lot of super intelligent people in hip-hop that are worth learning from. I mean, my favourite artist today, at the moment, was two, but my favourite UK artist who is, he just educates me all the time, is Akala.
You know, unbelievable,
the kids at school, it should be syllabus, but they have to listen to Akala's Fire in the Booth, because, like, that's an education right there.
You know what, I think still, even though the culture has been around for so long, there is still this perception of bravado. But then, you know, that's born out of the fact that, you know, a lot of hip hop artists come from, you know, working class backgrounds, or in some cases, like extreme poverty. Mm-hmm. And it's that thing of like, okay, so when you make a bit of cash, you're going to show it off. It's like, yeah, look, I made it. There's definitely also been a more conscious side, a more political side, a more romantic side, which doesn't always get the attention, you know, that pop culture likes to give, like, to the other side of things. Like, you know, it's so funny how it has trickled down so much of things that we say casually, like even like the phrase like bling, you know, you'll see that said on like QVC on the shopping channels. Like, that is so amazing and hilarious to me, like that how this culture has affected a commercial shopping channel.
That is the incredible Ramesh Ranganathan, and I think it's been going for about 5 years now. That podcast has been going for quite a while. We can't have a best of music episode without referencing broadcaster and music lover Edith Bowman, who recommends Song Exploder in our conversation. Song Exploder unpicks each of the musical elements of songs with the artists themselves, which is an incredible way to geek out on music with your favourite artists. Here's the clip. We're going to come to the last podcast that you've recommended. Now, you give me such a mixture, but it feels like only fair that there'd be a music one here. And I want to talk about Song Exploder, because it's a podcast. It's now a TV show, actually, on Netflix. It's mad how something goes from a podcast to, like, on Netflix. But tell me a little bit about Song Exploder, Edith.
It's as simple as an artist takes one of their songs and sort of deconstructs it. And I just find it really, really interesting, you know, being a fan of music. And what I love about this as well is that it's not driven by genre. So it's not, we only talk about this type of music, which is really interesting because my kids don't know what genre is with relation to music, because they, you know, they watch films. So they're into everything from classical music to AC/DC, because that's a lot of the places that they discover music. And I think that that's such a healthy way to approach music. So, you know, they have everybody on from like Cat Stevens to Run the Jewels to, they had Amy Mann on, who dissected One, which is a song that's on the Magnolia soundtrack, the Paul Thomas Anderson film. And it's just, I love it. There's no host. It's just the artists. There obviously is someone in the background interviewing them, you know, asking the questions and getting what they need out of them for the episode. But the way that they edit it, it's just the artist talking about their craft and how the song was made and how it was put together and the different versions that it went through. And there's a Fleetwood Mac episode as well, which is just, it's so great. I think it's brilliant. And it's quite meditative as well. So I kind of like listening to it when I want to kind of chill out a bit, unless it's a kind of proper like banging tune and then you literally want to go raving afterwards.
And really, in the case of Fleetwood Mac, I mean, everything was so written on the sleeve, so to speak. I had broken up with Stevie at that point. John and Christine McVie, who had been married, had broken up. Three of those people were writers and were writing to each other. So, I mean, usually if you break up with somebody and you want closure, you know, you're going to not see them for a long time or maybe ever. And so there was this exercise of the making of Rumors, especially, where you had to kind of compartmentalize everything. Writing the song and singing it required me to do that.
I think it's really clever. And I think that, you know, I'm kind of the mind as well now that I kind of crave information about things. So I think taking things on surface value and as an entertainment thing is great. But then I also think that if something really resonates with you and you really connect with something, it's lovely to have an opportunity to kind of deep dive into it. And I like hearing people talk about their craft as well.
And I guess music critics dissect songs and we look at songs, but just to kind of have the artists themselves talk about the song and bring you on that journey. And it is a journey. It is a journey.
Yeah, and it's not about critiquing something. It's not, and it's, you know, and also my whole thing with kind of critics is like, well, who gives you the right to say whether something's good or bad? You know, these people have put their heart and soul into something. It's the same with like, you know, when you, I mean, I've appeared so many times on like worst dress lists and it's like, well, who gives you the right to kind of have that opinion about someone? You know, what do you think? I left the house going, oh, I really hope I make it on a worst dress list today. It's like, no, I left the house feeling $1 million. So, you know, how dare you, you know, try and strip that away from someone. And I think that that's kind of one of the sorry, I've got off a total tangent here, but I think that that's one of the massive problems with our media is that people hide behind these kind of faceless digital platforms where they've got no comeback on it. And so that frustrates me and infuriates me. And sometimes when you call people out about it, they're really surprised because they don't expect you to respond to something. But I think, well, if you say something that can be hurtful and for no reason whatsoever, and you have really not put yourself in that position, and how would you feel about it? And that's what I kind of love about this, is that there's none of that. Yeah. It's coming purely from where the artist intended the song to come from.
From Edith Bowman's recommendation to a recommendation about Edith Bowman's podcast, from the one and only Dermot O'Leary. Now, Soundtracking is Edith's acclaimed podcast series that celebrates film scores and music from TV, speaking with the composers, writers and musicians behind some of the famous film scenes. Here's Dermot discussing what he loves so much about the show.
We were talking about music and we're both huge music fans, and the next is Edith Bowman's podcast Soundtracking, which I love. I'm a huge Edith Bowman fan anyway, because she started out MTV News, which was my first job.
Yeah.
And I look to her as a huge role model, as do to you as well. And I just love movies and I love the music side of things. And with podcasts, I didn't realise this, because I remember she did something on Radio 6 similar to this. Yeah. And she said it just never really clicked with the audience. So she just decided, let's move this to a different platform.
Which is one of the reasons why I've picked this, because it's the podcast itself is brilliant.
Yeah.
And Edith's a brilliant interviewer.
And the people she has.
Terrific. And so she's obviously well respected because she gets those people. But this podcast is many, many ways, how she gets there and how she's got to making it, the success it is and how respected it is as interesting as the people she interviews and as admirable as the esteem that her guests hold her in, is how her tenacity and intelligence and fight in a time when it probably wasn't easy to get something like this off the ground, when no one's helping her, she completely did it off her own bat with a little microphone and turning up with, you know, wherever they were, she'd go and interview them. The wonderful thing about the world as it is at the moment is when I first started out in telly, and maybe I still do, but I was all I wanted when I was in my 20s was I want a talk show. And that for me was the mecca. I desperately want a talk show. And then you get to an age and you go, you can't sit around and wait for this thing to come to you by virtue of the fact you're on telly. You just got to go and, if you want to be an interviewer and you want to be respected as an interviewer, just go and do it. And, you know, Edith has that diktat where this is a prime example of that, where she's gone, I'm just going to make this content myself. And she started from the ground up with a good reputation and a respect as a good interviewer. But by God, look at it now. You know, she's flying.
And it's such a, I suppose, specific niche as well. And what I love as well, because a lot of these, especially with films coming out, I think she had Danny Boyle on when Trainspotting 2 came out.
Yeah.
And they must be doing the rounds, doing all the big interviews about the film. And then you can see the person being interviewed gets so excited because they're talking about the music or, you know, not the same old questions that they're being asked everywhere else.
Yeah, that's a really clever sort of editorial point, isn't it, really, that she's like, I remember I did one of the first ever pilot junkets I did was for Rush Hour 2. But the whole thing was, I was doing like a pre me getting T4. I was doing these little shows. I was on, when I was on like lunch, I was a warm up guy as well as a researcher. And then Andy Peters came on and saw me do warm up and said, listen, I think I might be able to, I can't get you a job, but I can get you some screen tests.
Please tell me Andy Peters said he found you. Because every time I meet Andy Peters, he says, I created that. I found that.
He did, to be fair.
Yes, he did.
He definitely owns, I owe a big debt to Andy. And Andy said, look, I can't, I had a coffee with Andy, mm-hmm. and he said, look, I can't give you a job, but I'll give you some screen tests. And I got this job, and it was kind of a magazine sports show, me and Margarita Taylor. Mm. It's the first gig together. We were doing a piece on Jackie Chan, and I went to this junket. Yeah. And the relief that I remember they felt when I walked in, I just wanted to talk about Jackie Chan. And they're like, oh, God, thank God. It's not a question about my character or the action sequences I've got to do. And everyone just eulogised about Jackie Chan. And, mm-hmm. and so I can, you know, I remember that stuck with me.
Yeah.
So it must be wonderful for Edith to go in and go, let's talk about, you know, Morricone or, you know, yeah. and just be able to talk about the marvellous music.
Something different
for
a change. And even, like, obviously Peaky Blinders is huge at the moment. And she had Cillian Murphy and Anthony Byrne. Yes. It just makes you think of things differently because obviously the music used in that is like new artists against this kind of old school backdrop.
Yeah, well, Nick Cave, the Leather Weathers, Nick Cave is wonderful.
Cillian, welcome back to Soundtrackin'.
Thank you.
Anthony, welcome to Soundtrackin'.
Thank you.
I'm so excited about the new series Peaky Blinders. I haven't seen a thing.
Yes.
So I'm coming to this blind in terms of where you are sonically with it.
Yeah.
But this is a series, obviously, historically, that has this amazing landscape of music attached to it. I guess the one thing that you can't change is that theme tune. Do you think of it as the Nick Cave track's theme tune?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it is, isn't
it? It's become part of the DNA of the show, I think. Mm. Yeah, it's iconic. Take a little walk to the edge of town and go across the track where the viaduct looms like a bird of doom as it shifts and cracks. Where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand. Where did you start on the music and when did you start thinking about music for this series?
What is your favourite soundtrack of all time?
As in?
Of you, just a film, of a film. That doesn't have to be something.
The music,
yeah, music from
a film.
Yeah.
What a great question. One of my favourite movies was Heat by Michael Mann's Heat. And mm-hmm. Moby did a lot of the work on that. And it's kind of a love letter to Los Angeles. And for all its kind of faults and quirks and weirdnesses, it does... The thing about LA I love is the light. And actually, this is, for the most part, quite a nocturnal film. But the way the music... I think Moby does most of the music.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what I love about Moby? But it's not to change the subject, but you know he gives his music for free.
Does
if you
really?
Make a short film or anything, for any independent films, you can use any Moby track for free.
It's a lovely interviewee, Moby.
Yeah.
Really nice chap.
It's a song. The songs are so powerful. And as I said, you'll hear that song somewhere else.
Now.
Look it up now and see what it is. We can edit it in as though like you knew what it was. Not that I do that all the time.
Kind of recording.
But then, no, every time you hear that song, it'll bring you back to that particular moment
100%,
in that film. No, it's huge. Just speaking of films, I love, have you seen Guardians of the Galaxy? The soundtrack
yes.
for that.
Oh, great soundtrack.
Ooga, chaka, hooked on a feeling. Oh.
I kind of tried to get away after I saw that the first time. I tried.
What do you mean you tried to get away?
Tried to get away with.
Oh, I was like, where are you going?
On my radio show, I started putting like songs in and not claiming them as my own choices.
Okay, yeah.
But referencing, and some guy just tweeted in and went, you're just playing Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack. And I was like, ah, shit, you're totally busted.
Smart move, though. Great selection.
Ah, remember the days of mixtapes? Throwing us back to our teenage years with the help of Frankie Bridge. Next up, we're celebrating the brilliant podcast that is Teenage Mixtape with Joel Dommett and Steve Dunn. It's a fantastic series drenched in nostalgia and the occasional improv session, and well worth a listen.
Music is such a huge part of your life from such a young age. How old were you when you knew you could sing?
Oh, I don't know. I think I was probably about 9 when I started stage school. So probably not really until then, to be honest. I think my parents were like, what? Where's that come from?
Yeah, did anyone in your family sing? Did you come from a musical household?
My mum always played instruments, so she played cello. My aunt moved to like Florida when she was like 21 and she was always like a pub singer. So I think it's always been on my mum's side. Like my dad's side are completely tone deaf. It's horrendous. but my mum's side, yeah, like my nan and granddad were always singing. No one professionally, but you know, it was more in their side. So, but also not pushy parents. So like I went to a local dance school and the dance teacher said to my parents, oh, I think you should send her to stage school. And then it kind of just kind of went from there.
And how did S Club Juniors happen?
Oh, they did like an open audition on CBeebies with S Club 7. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, it's an open audition. Because at that time I was at a local stage school. And I was like, it's going to be loads of people there. And the night before, Rochelle and I were like, let's just go. We asked our mums.
So were you like, friends at that stage?
Yeah, so we went to the same stage school in Essex. So we just decided the night before, we had no songs practiced, no dance routines practiced. And our mums were like, okay, fine. So they took us and I think it was like 10,000 kids auditioned. Wow. And there was like loads of stages you had to go through. And there was like kids practicing dance routines in the queue, kids doing the splits. And me and Rochelle were like trying to learn an S Club 7 song in time. And yeah, it was one of those things. And it was the first audition that I'd ever got through. Like I'd auditioned so many times for things and it was the first one that I got, so it's pretty lucky.
I want to talk about a podcast now which connects really well to this time of your life, which is the Teenage Mixtape podcast. Yeah. And it's with comedians Joel Dommett and Steve Dunn, who are childhood besties, similar to like you and Rochelle growing up together. And basically they talk about the music that got them through puberty. And I guess when you were going through puberty, you were creating your own music.
Yeah, it's weird. A lot of the time that I experimented with like what music I liked and what I listened to and going to festivals and gigs and stuff was kind of between S Club Juniors and the Saturdays. So it was kind of, I think when I was like between about 16 and 18, I became a bit of an emo, as they were called. And I got really into bands and I used to go to like Reading Festival every year. And
I thought it was the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, I used to mosh and all that stuff. And so going on with Joel was quite nice because he's into a lot of that music. And for me, it's just really nostalgic. Like it just reminds me of a really fun, I suppose, carefree part of my life where I wasn't in the public eye and I could experiment because I hadn't been given the opportunity to do that really.
What type of bands were you listening to? Just give me names.
Well, I loved people like Green Day and all that, Fallout Boy, but Paramore was like my ultimate. Like I just thought Hayley Williams was like just the ultimate human. Like she could hit notes while jumping around and she just was insane.
Yeah, it's a great, really fun harmonising game. Should we do it?
Let's just do it.
Should I start the note?
You start the note.
I'll start the note. You join in with the harmonised. Do you want to jump in second and jump?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Sounds good.
Yes!
I mean, it doesn't get
can I just say, at home, the word that we harmonise is chicken. So there are four of us, which is great, like a four-way harmony, so good. And so I will just be in the kitchen cooking and I go, chicken. Amazing.
Should we do a combination of meals? So if you say chicken,
okay.
Then I'll say peas and then you say...
Whatever I want with
and wait, okay. go minor on the end.
That's your...
So I would go, chicken, you could go, chicken, you could go, chicken. Oh.
Okay. Right, here we go. Okay. So you're saying peas, are you?
Yeah, I'm going to add something into the mix that
I'm chickening.
With chicken. Yeah.
Here we go.
Chicken.
Potatoes.
I think this is a really fun game.
I can't believe you play the same game as we do.
Oh, we love it.
I do feel like you get insight into people when you know about their childhood and growing up. Like I felt like I was such a nerd growing up. And I was like, oh, just so uncool. But again, if I went to see, I remember going to see Green Day and I'm like, I am the coolest chick in town.
Yeah.
And then I go back to my convent school that I went to.
I think the geeky people are the ones that come out the coolest.
Yeah,
like, and that's what I wish you knew when you were younger. You're like, look, don't worry about being popular. Like, they're not the cool kids when you get older.
It is really interesting listening to Teenage Mixtape because there's people like Paddy McGuinness, All Time Low, Davina McCall. And I'm really surprised at what some people listen to when they were growing up. And I think, oh, yeah, you're just human like the rest of us. You listen to some interesting tunes.
Yeah, I know. I think it's funny. And I think you do, like you said, you do learn a lot about someone by learning what they listen to. And like, I remember someone saying to me and Wayne once, one of our good friends, he was like, so how did you two end up together? Because like, Wayne's a bit out there sometimes. And Frankie can seem really like straight laced or whatever. And I was like, oh, really? And he was like, well, what was you like when you were younger? And I was like, well, I used to listen to like Under Oath and like screamo music. And I used to go to gigs and go in like mosh pits and stuff. And he was like, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. I was like, what? He actually thought I was called an emu as well. He was like, what are those emus?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
From Teenage Mixtapes to Teenage Fantasy, I spoke with Irish heartthrob and superstar Niall Horan about his love of listening to George Ezra and friends. George and his musician friends cover everything from songwriting as well as the honest and relatable moments of struggle that come with massive success. Here's Niall talking about his own episode on the show.
I'm a huge fan of George Ezra and friends, yeah. And I found it really interesting why George started doing that, because he was a fan of podcasts anyway, but he found it as a singer-songwriter was really helpful for him to talk to other singer-songwriters about their journey. Yeah. And I listened to your one, and it was really interesting because I heard you talking about things. I've interviewed you before, I've seen your interviews before, and you talking about things that you've never talked about. Yeah. And even at one point, George asks you your advice because he's about to do this O2 arena and all these different bigger gigs, and he's asking your advice. And was it nice to kind of be interviewed by someone who is, I suppose, one of your peers?
I absolutely loved that podcast. It was literally sat in this exact spot.
You have to come to your house to pin you down. I've realised that.
Yeah, honestly. If you're on your podcast, they all happen at my kitchen table.
You get tea, though, so that's good. That's great. It does serve tea.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved that podcast anyway. I nearly kind of half put myself forward for it because I knew he was on the search for people to do it, you know? I just loved the personal side you get. Like, I mean, you sit down with Elton John and like all these unbelievable artists and hearing a side of Elton that you would never hear just because, you know, he keeps his life quite closed, rightly so. Same with Ed. And just have like a really, like, we literally just stuck microphones on our shirts and we just sat for like an hour and a half and just chatted. Like, we don't get to do it a lot, really, but sit down with another artist and actually talk about how you write a song or, you know, your feelings towards fame and just general chit-chat that you don't really get to have with other people because you don't do the same job. Mm-hmm. Sitting down and actually having like a chat about music and things like that, I just loved it, and I'm a huge fan of that podcast anyway.
And you must spend a lot of your time, especially now, because, you know, we'll talk about the second album coming out this month. It'll probably be out by the time this comes out. But doing a lot of promo, doing a lot of interviews, which are kind of the same, have to be the same, I suppose, because you're talking about different songs. But to have the environment, being in your house, having a chat where you don't feel as guarded, because you've probably learned over years to be a bit guarded in interviews.
Yeah. I remember talking to someone about it before, and I always like to say, I'm being myself in interviews. Mm. Like, and to an extent I am, but you'd never really actually fully give yourself away at all, do you?
No, because your words get twisted, or you'll say something and they'll take it out of context.
But even if you knew full sure that that it was never going to get twisted, you'd probably still have a little guard up, you know, and kind of, I like to call it like red light syndrome. You see the red light come on and you just turn into a different person in a way. Yeah. Like, a bit less so now because I know you for 10 years, but like, it's there is something that you'll always have a guard up against it. But the questions, I mean, I always remember a good interview. Like even I did a day of promo last week and I can remember this one standout interview I did because it was based on, it was actually someone genuinely asking me about my music and wanting to know about my life, like maybe not wanting to know about my life, but definitely gave me that idea.
Pretended they wanted to know.
But I could tell it was never just going to be like a flash in the pan type story. It wasn't like a quick, the same, like, I mean, I could retweet 100 articles right now that were written in the last couple of weeks about me that probably have the same answers just because you're asked the same questions and you literally just have like bullet points that you hit. And you don't you're subconsciously doing it.
Do you ever forget in an interview, especially if you've done a junket or back to back, that you're like, have I answered this question already? Am I repeating myself? Like, have you ever, do you ever just kind of lose an interview where you're nearly on autopilot?
Oh, 100%. I've done it. Like, I've done junkets for movies, junkets for albums, junkets for all sorts. And it's just like, you nearly turn into a little bit of a robot, but... I try and consciously think, try and at least give, if you're going to say the same thing, like at least give it a different angle.
Yeah.
Because you can easily run away with it and just turn it into a lot of blah, 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 but whatever.
We talk about that roller coaster at the start that has been nonstop. And it was interesting listening to Lewis Capaldi did George Ezra's podcast because both of them kind of got into it a bit different. You're kind of all on the same level now, but you got into it differently. You kind of were thrown into it and you were doing stadiums before you even did the smaller venues. Like, it's mad when you kind of look back at it.
I do not deserve to have a number one for 7 weeks. No one deserves to have a number one. No one deserves fuck all, I don't think. But, like, no one deserves that. No one should have that. It's like an anomaly thing for me. Like, that will never happen again in my career. I can tell you that right now. And it was like that thing of the bigger it got, the more I felt like, oh, fuck, I shouldn't be doing... Like, it was like this thing, and you go in, and people are like, so how, like, you know, how do you write a hit? And you're like, fuck, what? I don't fucking know. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and you just, it's so surreal. And I get it, like, even when I see backstage at festivals, and you fucking see, I don't know, you're next door to, like, Nile Rodgers, and fucking, like, I don't know, fucking, like, people like yourself, and people like... I don't know, Jess Glenn, the Cooks, fucking Arctic Monkeys around the corner, and you're just like, why the fuck am
the
I
the thing
doing
is
here?
With someone like Nile Rodgers, is if you said, how do you write a hit, he'd be like, oh, it's simple, man.
But it's like, it's just one of those things, like, I just, even just being in that environment, I kind of like, I show up and I'm not showered, fucking disgusting, and I look around and everyone looks great, and they're all fucking just, like, they're just like, it just feels to me in that environment like, I do it like a kid at his first day of school. Every time we go to festivals, I feel like it.
But it's weird because that, for me, has gone. But it kind of almost happened overnight I miss it. Yeah. I miss the, not that I'm like, I don't walk onto a festival site like, here I am.
Well, I don't know, I saw you transmitting. You
bowling about.
Security guards or that.
There was one thing which you said, and it was... you have to have life experiences to write about stuff. And I suppose with One Direction, you were kind of doing album. There wasn't much gap in between.
Yeah.
Where were the life experiences?
Just kind of like relationship stuff in between. You were gathering it, you know, and the gaps that I was around here or whatever. You know, and you were just kind of picking bits and pieces. The real stuff I've noticed since I've like gone out on my own is, and I've given myself time to write albums. I found that since going out on my own, I can be a bit more... You know, I've been through relationships and gone out the back the other side of them and kind of taken my stories from there.
And here's music-obsessed Clara again with another fantastic recommendation. And The Writer Is, which celebrates the writers behind the songwriting. Check it out. So we're going to move on to your next one, which is also music-influenced. And The Writer Is with Ross Golan. And I didn't know who Ross was before this podcast.
Yeah,
but so he's written for everybody.
I absolutely love this podcast because, again, I think, you know, as a music lover, you know, music broadcaster, I've always been obsessed with songwriters more than artists, actually, I would say, over the years. Just because, you know, I mean, obviously there are artists who definitely write their own songs, but I think there are so many unsung heroes, no pun intended, who don't get the shine that they deserve. And to be honest, some of them don't want that, which is in itself really refreshing. But, you know, for me, I'm still somebody that has, even I've chucked out loads of my CDs, you know, Rituals was getting a CD and getting the notes and just scanning it to see who wrote what, who played the drums here. Thank you, Nurse. That was always my favourite part of getting a CD. And I would love to kind of see the repeated names across different projects. But okay, so so-and-so produced that. Oh, and they worked on this album. Oh, and they wrote that. And I think, this podcast is such a great celebration of that. And he just speaks to absolutely everyone. And it's just so cool, hearing all the stories behind these big hits, just to big up those people that don't always get the praise that they deserve.
You mentioned the CDs thing there that you've gotten rid of. I've got so many CDs, Clara. I've got so many. I can't, they're like babies. I can't get rid of them. I don't listen to them. I still have a CD player and I still have a DVD player. I'm like old school, but I don't use them. And I'd like you, I love the sleeve. I remember the first thing I used to do when I'd buy an album was open the sleeve up, go through the thank yous, go through who wrote songs. I remember when Guy Chambers was really famous because he wrote all the songs with Robbie Williams, and he was like, oh, who is this super famous songwriter? And, I remember years ago when One Republic were in the charts a lot and Ryan Tedder came on. But Ryan Tedder is probably best known for writing Beyonce songs and Adele songs as much as his own band. And
exactly.
I became obsessed with songwriters.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's such a gift, to be able to sing in itself is an amazing thing. But to put pen to paper, some people have got a God-given talent, to pluck certain words together, form them into sentences that just make things that just imprint on us for life. It's amazing.
I always wondered, though, do you ever think they get a bit pissed off? Imagine writing a song for Dua Lipa and then she gets really famous with it and everyone knows that song and they all assume that she's written it, because a lot of people assume that the artists write the songs. And a lot of the time they do. But imagine doing that and then not getting the glory. Do you ever think, I don't know, I always think, do songwriters get a little bit pissed off? Because a lot of them started out wanting to be
on stage. Oh, absolutely. I definitely know songwriters who still absolutely want to be, want to be artists and stars in their own right. And I completely get that, because again, it's you've got this God-given talent and you want to get your roses. But then I also know songwriters who are like, don't even look at me, don't talk to me, let me just, here's a song and go for it. And I'll tell you a great example of that. And she's only just really started coming out of her shell. I'm sure you know who I'm about to say, but Sia is a fantastic example of that. She was singing with 07 for years, very, very low key. She's been putting out music as a solo artist for ages, but was very much look, take my songs, but don't pay attention to me when I'm going to the shops. I'm not trying to be out here on a front cover of any magazine. I just want to write my songs, collect my check and mind my business. And slowly but surely, she's been coming out of her shell, but even still, she's got a wig covering her face.
Yeah, we'd have no idea who she was if she was walking down the grocery center. No idea.
Unless you're a super, super fan, you probably wouldn't even know it was her. And I think that's pretty amazing. I think that's kind of magical, But yeah, I can completely get and would understand why some artists still want to get their time to shine, because again, to write a song and to have it affect people must be such an amazing feeling. You want in on that for sure. The ego's come on, give me.
I know. And I'm looking at, as I said, Ross Golan, who hosts The Writer Is, this podcast. I wasn't familiar with the name, but I'm looking at the list, Clara, of people you've worked with. And I mean, Demi Lovato, Justin Bieber, Nicki Minaj, Keith Urban, James Blunt, CeeLo Green. Quite a mix of people.
And I love it, because that's why no one says no to him when he asks them to come on the podcast. It's a safe space, because I think, the way he conducts the conversations, it's very honest. It's very open. I think he understands that possible frustration with some of them, where it's just like, look, no, let me get some respect put on my name. I need people to know that I did that.
Julia Michaels. Julia, because she's this incredible writer, but she's this incredible artist. I saw her perform the other night. She was very kind and invited me up when she was opening for Pink at the Staples Center. We got up and did Peer Pressure. So I've really experienced her fully as an artist now, as well as mainly beforehand experiencing her as a writer. And she's obviously very young in this whole experience. She's only in her early 20s, and she's achieved so much, so she's totally wise beyond her years. And we both meet brilliant writers who've been doing this for all sorts of numbers of years, but to find somebody so so talented and successful so young with such a wise head on her shoulders, she's taught me, even in the time I've known her, a lot about, I guess, what I want to do going forward and how I want to be as an artist and a writer. So pretty indispensable.
She's a huge heart.
Yeah,
she's
big time.
This is when podcasts and music really collide. Imagine hearing your own music being critiqued
on a podcast. Jessie Ware experienced just that when a friend told her to listen to Keep It, the show about pop culture and politics. Here's her reaction and the clip in question. I love when people recommend podcasts I haven't listened to because I just add it into my list. This is one called Keep It.
There's a funny story about Keep It.
Love a funny story.
My friend, Samantha Morgan, who is the biggest podcast nerd ever. She's brilliant. She gives me all my recommendations. She was like, babe, have you heard them discussing your album in this podcast? And I was like, I don't know what the podcast is. I don't know what you're talking about. She was like, there's been this huge discussion over whether your record is disco or not on this podcast. It's hysterical. And there's an amazing one-liner. And I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to it. So basically, it's a really interesting podcast presented by three people, and it's American. And they discuss lots of pop culture, politics. And for one of the times, they were discussing my album. Now, it now makes sense because when I was doing press for a lot of kind of LGBT publications in America, there was one journalist that was like, listen, there's a big Twitter furore in the LGBT community with you about whether your album is disco or not. And I was like, really? People are discussing that? Okay, well, it's not disco, but it's definitely got nods to disco. So then, anyway, so then this was, I wondered whether it stemmed from this podcast, because I'm sure they've got quite a big following. And so I listened to this thing out of complete intrigue to see what they said. And this host kind of talks about me and says, listen, like, Jessie Ware, really liked her. Last two albums sucked. And I was like, is she going to write a new record that's going to be fucking dull? And then she does this one. And I'm like, yeah, it's cool. And then everyone's going crazy about it. And I just don't think it's disco. And they were having a right old chat. And it was brilliant. And they were discussing it. And I totally took both of their points. Anyway, it kind of ended. And one of them liked the record. One of them loved the record. And one was like, this is disco. How? Anyway, it carried on to the next episode at the beginning. And they were like, yeah, we've kind of gotten a bit of a debate about this record and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, then there was this one liner, and I'm probably going to say it wrong, but the guy says, Louis, if you can't dance to Mirage, you need to take a seat in McDonald's. And I kind of almost like wrote to them and was like, this is hysterical and I love this. Anyway, it just made me laugh. And so I started listening to them and they're so brilliant. Even though one of them didn't like the last record, you win some, you lose some. But anyway, it's very much, you know, current affairs, popular culture, and debating whether my record is disco. But I mean, it came from a place of kind of my friend saying this and then me thinking, wow, this is a really interesting podcast that everyone should give a listen to.
Is Jessie Ware a dame?
She better not be. I don't think she... I do think we should be referring to all British people, maybe even men and women, as dame all the time. It just works. But to reiterate, last week I talked about Jessie Ware, the actually awesome artist. I don't mean to say I hate Jessie Ware or anything. I just don't find her new album danceable enough. And apparently people love dancing super fucking slow. I'm sorry. Like, that's the takeaway I get from all this uproar.
My only argument is that it is very much disco. It's just not dance disco.
Now, you said that on Twitter, and I can tell you thought it sounded smart. What the fuck are you talking about? Disco is about dancing, sweetie.
No, disco is about a sensuality. It is about a moment of escape from, you know, the torrential downpour of racism and bigotry and misogyny and everything else that is outside of the discotheque. And sometimes there is a low downbeat in some disco music. And, you know, I think if you listen to some Once Upon a Time, a Love Trilogy by Donna Summer, those aren't upbeat. Those aren't Giorgio Moroder giving you I Feel Love. Those are, you know, something sensual and ketamine.
I feel like, okay, well, that's an interesting point. But I do feel like the Once Upon a Time era wouldn't necessarily come on at Studio 54, for example. I appreciate the lushness of the production of this album. I just don't think it being heralded as the dance moment we needed is quite accurate. I'm not happy with how it was reviewed, basically. And also, people were trying to read me to filth for not knowing about disco. Honey, please come the fuck over here. I'll take you through the Bee Gees catalog. I'll take you through the Cheryl Lynn catalog. I'll take you through the Vicky Sue Robinson catalog. Come for me. White gays specifically. Definitely stand up to me.
One of the things about podcasts, when I talk about them in the past, and a lot of them, it feels like you're listening to a conversation. It feels like
even you mentioned the high-low earlier on, I feel like Pandora and Dolly are my mates and I'm suddenly part of this conversation. There's one thing like eavesdropping on a conversation about something. When you're eavesdropping on a conversation about yourself, that just reminds me of like being in the school loo and hearing people talking about you outside. It's a very strange, surreal feeling, I'm guessing.
Yeah, right. Because, I mean, look, in that situation, somebody wasn't such a fan. But however, I don't know whether my skin has just got thicker. And also, I think it was such an interesting debate they were having. I was really intrigued. But you're so right. And I mean, the thing is, like, anything goes in podcasts. So you don't know whether you're going to get ripped apart in one or not. I mean, you'd like to think you're not. But like, yeah, it's unfiltered, which is kind of the beauty of it.
Thanks so much for tuning into this special episode of Castaway. Remember to tune in next Thursday for another edition covering a whole new selection of juicy podcasts. As always, we'd love you to rate, review, follow, and subscribe. And I'll see you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.